Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
There are people in power right now who have opinions about you based on their privilege of skin color. I am in the text. Pilate was European. Jesus was not European. They live in a world shaped by European standards of beauty, shaped by Moynihan studies, shaped by bell curves. They live in a different world from your world altogether. They are ignorant and arrogant, and these are graduates of Harvard and Yale setting policies for you based on the stupidity of David Hume, Immanuel Kant, Voltaire, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, Thomas Jefferson, a pedophile, Theodore Roosevelt, and the racist Supreme Court.
You know, every once in a while, things occur in the United States of America that leave you with your mouth hanging over. You just heard the inner Obama. You just heard the words that are no doubt spoken in the White House when no one is listening. You just heard the modus operandi of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, is my estimation. Whose words were those? Those were the words spoken in the Metropolitan Baptist Church in Charleston, West Virginia, by Obama's pastor, Reverend Wright, who said that white supremacy drives world policy. A man who attacked some of the greatest minds in history, Thomas Jefferson and Voltaire and Theodore Roosevelt, as a politician, are beyond reproach in terms of intelligence, and yet this lowlife, nobody, hateful black supremacist is attacking them as ignorant and arrogant. Now, if it was just a crazy ranting preacher in a church, we wouldn't even pay attention to it. However, you have to understand that Michelle and Barack Obama sat in this guy's church for 20 straight years, had their brains filled with this hatred and these lies, and are now presiding over the destruction of the United States of America. Their minds were warped and brainwashed by this psychotic. If, again, he was not president and he sat in that church, it would be one thing. But here's a man who was president who sat in that church. When I say to you that this is the most divisive, demonic situation this country has ever been in, I am not doing this for effect. When I say to you that the Obama administration admits that tax cuts work in China, listen to this story. While speaking recently about the communist government in China, Undersecretary of State Robert Hormats, an Obama appointee, actually praised China's decision to spur economic growth by lowering taxes. Did you hear? But Obama gave an argument in Vermont saying the opposite. He says it was basic math that taxes needed to be increased on wealthy Americans so the government could do more for the poor. And then he said, this is not class envy. This is not class warfare. This is basic math. He said, look, if somebody like me gets a tax break that they don't need, let's pause right there. Of course he doesn't need a tax break. He has Air Force 1, 2, 3, U.S. military. He has every expense paid for and then some. What does he need a tax break for? But yet he attacks the very people who support him. And he's actually arguing, this is about the most distasteful thing I've ever heard come out of his mouth. He's actually arguing that's not class warfare, but that's exactly what Obama is engaging in. He's saying if you make above a certain amount, you're actually stealing money from somebody else in the United States of America. Now, why does Obama want to discourage people from being rich? Why does he attack those who work hard and are productive? Why does he support poverty? Why does he attack success? Why does he praise our worst enemies like the Muslim Brotherhood, who has just given $1.5 billion to, or is it $1.2 billion, while trying to put Israel into a box? Why does he cut the funds in the military, resulting in plane crashes such as we saw last weekend? Why does he permit our border to descend into chaos? while his Fast and Furious program weaponizes the border? Why does he, as the economy falters, reward his friends in corporations? Why does he reward his cronies who are making off with all the wealth? I've asked these questions on this show. I wrote Trickle Down Tyranny, which, by the way, is now a raging bestseller. Thank you for recognizing what's at stake here. Many of you flooded the bookstores. And, of course, you know what's going to happen. When you bring Trickle Down Tyranny to work, when you bring Trickle Down Tyranny to church, when you bring Trickle Down Tyranny to the polling place, when you bring Trickle Down Tyranny, you're going to see how tolerant the Obama socialists really are. You're going to see the country you really live in. But let us go back to Reverend Wright, who says that white supremacy drives world policy. On the face of it, it's stunning that he would get away with such racism. But when you actually analyze it, it's a lie on top of it all. Because I will remind you, and maybe this will make you uncomfortable, although he says that whites are ignorant and arrogant, 90% of all of you with that, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. I'm willing to listen to you. The cars you drive, the lights you turn on, the medicines you use, virtually everything you do, including flushing your toilet. If you would let this psychotic get any more traction in this country, we are going to wind up in a state less than the third world. And yet your children have been subjected to this kind of vile hatred in their colleges for well over 15 years now. The so-called deconstructionists, the people who have argued that people of white skin color are actually inferior, who have argued that every white person is a racist and every black person, never seen anything like this, especially in an election year. Let me ask you this question. Do you think that Reverend Wright saying that white supremacy drives world policy in the Metropolitan Baptist Church in Charleston by accident? Do you believe Obama told Reverend Wright to open up again? Do you believe that that Obama wants this hatred out there once again? And ask yourself why Romney says nothing about it. Romney, who could care less, in my opinion, about what we the little people are doing, is out surfboarding somewhere. And here we have the president of the United States engaging in class warfare, triggering hatred like we've never seen since the 60s in this country. Now, it goes back to what Rahm Emanuel said, never let a crisis go to waste. Many of us fear this man. We watch his face. We see utter disdain, arrogance, unlike any ever seen in a democracy before. We're looking at the face of the New World Order. The face of the New World Order is what we're looking at. Do you agree with me when I write that Obama's tyranny brings a loss of freedom? Do you believe that the president is staging nothing less than an assault on our freedoms? Do you believe that this man actually cares about the poor? Or do you think that Obama is using this racial division for his own gain? What is he trying to achieve? Yes, he may steam up the Al Sharptonites. Yeah, he may join the racists in this country who steam up race against race, man against man, brother against brother. So let's say he provokes to get excited and go vote for him again. Do you think that this will alienate the blue-collar white who put him in office? You know, if you turn on the cable channels, you would think that you're living in another country. Did you know the country is still 68% European-American? Did you know that? You would think that the country is 10% European-American. You think it's 90% people of color, but you'd be wrong. The country is still 68% European-American. It's a very uncomfortable fact for those at Harvard and Yale and in the White House. But the more he attacks white people through mad dogs like Reverend Wright, the more he's going to alienate the blue-collar white man. And by the way, if he doesn't alienate the blue-collar white man who put him in power, then we're all finished. And I'll say something else that maybe will make you even more uncomfortable. If the blue-collar white man votes for him again, they deserve what they will get. Okay? I'll be right back.
Wait, hang on. Before I go, I just recorded my 10th annual economic briefing with author and Swiss America chairman Craig R. Smith. And what I discovered confirms my worst fears. Something is about to happen that will change the course of world history. And not one in a thousand will believe it until it's already too late. After writing four important books accurately predicting the future of gold, oil, the dollar, and inflation, Mr. Smith is on the verge of releasing his next book. This CD covers the root issue of this coming crisis and offers three critical steps to protect your family from the fallout. Call today for this hot new Savage CD, The Future of Money. It's free. 800-289-2646. Again, write it down. The Future of Money. 800-289-2646. Or online at SwissAmerica.com/Savage.
Savage.
Remember the song, Born on a Mountaintop in Tennessee? Green estate in the land of the free, raised in the woods so he knew every tree, and he killed himself a bear when he was only three. Davy Crockett. Remember that?
Davy Crockett.
All right, what kind of cereal do you like? We're big cereal fans around here. What's your cereal?
Well, you know, I like Honey Nut Cheerios.
There you
and
go.
I like Honey Nut Chex. And
This is just what the doctor ordered. Just what the doctor ordered to save us from the tyranny of the Obama administration is a middle of the road check pants Republican that existed sometime in 1953. Romney is the type of Republican that existed in 1953 around the time of Nelson Rockefeller. I mean, I'll vote for him. I don't care whether he comes on the show or not. I really don't care. Don't you understand? It doesn't matter to me. Why do these people think that by going on CNN and talking about cereal, they're going to win votes? Who is advising Romney? People who want him to lose. Do you understand that? Do you understand finally what I'm saying? I don't care one way or the other. It's his problem, not mine. I'm not running for any office. My prediction is that I will be around on radio long after many of these people are forgotten. So understand that I don't need them to come on this show. They need me for you. I don't need them for any reason whatsoever. What am I going to get a spike in ratings for 5 seconds when he comes on and says nothing? Forget about it. Who needs it? I'd rather talk about the subjects that are of interest to me, such as the brainwashing of the American people, 1984, Brave New World. I'd rather talk about railroad trains that I rode on when I was a kid. I'm writing about it, and that's why my mind's slipping back. I'm doing all, you know, I can't get it. It's another book so far down the line, I can't talk about it. But my mind is back in my childhood. Fat Al, Fat Al's Tuna, Tippy. You can't believe it, getting dragged into it. It's a whole different universe when you start thinking about your childhood. I was so tempted to read you a childhood story today, but instead I decided to talk about the brainwashing of the administration. Am I the only one who saw the darkness come over his eyes, who saw his head cocked to the left and his jaw get jutted out like Mussolini? Something was really wrong. Is there anyone out there who saw that? Here we go. Marianne in New York on WOR. Marianne, did you notice anything about Mr. Obama's look that struck you as odd?
Well, I saw that same look when he made the speech in Berlin, when he was running for president. And I am a nurse, and I was standing taking care of patients, and they had it on television. I actually got chills, and I just saw a fascist dictator standing there. And
what do you mean? You mean the Il Duce look?
Yes. There's a darkness. You can see it, but not everyone can see it. And that's what's so frustrating, that you see the truth. And not everyone is in that mindset. They're being.
Do you remember many, many, many decades ago, several decades ago, when Nixon gave a speech and he had a 5 o'clock shadow, and they said that ruined him in the debate against Kennedy because he looked dark. Remember, they said his face darkened. Remember that? It looked shadowy, rather. Well, now you've got Obama looking shadowy, and nobody says a word about it in the media.
Right. Right. Well, they can't call the truth anymore. Now, I know that you're a scriptural man, and actually Jesus said that the battle of Armageddon will be the battle over truth. It won't be a physical battle. It will be a battle for truth. And that's what you're describing.
Well, I don't know how to relate to that last part of your speech. I mean, I'm many things to many people. You know, people hear what they want to hear in a talk show host. Some hear the things that they think. Some hear the things you don't even say. Some want to castigate you so they hear things you didn't say, or they twist what you say. That's the problem with being a public speaker, is that the public gets to decide what you're saying. You can say it anything you want. You can say it any way you want it. You could be perfectly clear in your meaning, and yet people will distort what you're saying. You know that, don't you?
Yes. Yes.
However, wait. But however, comma, when you see a speaker turn shadowy while he is delivering an address, and you see his eyes shade over, and you see his head cocked to the left and his chin jut out, and he takes on a look of Il Duce, that's something anyone who is a media watcher should notice. You don't see that persona even in Newt Gingrich. You don't see that in the neuron. The neuron's face doesn't change when he speaks, does it?
No, no.
I got a smile out of you. I call Ron Paul the neuron. It's almost semi-affectionate. Even Santorum, the character deficient Santorum, his face doesn't alter during a speech, does it?
No.
That's because he was altered at birth. I mean, he's everything you think you see is what you get with Santorum. He is the high school dropout trying to be the president of the college.
Perfect.
I'm sending you a copy of what? Hold it now. Don't go away. This is the new game on the Savage Nation. If you name it, you gain it. What's the name of the book?
Abuse of Power.
Nope. Sorry. No. See, I have to condition you into saying the name of... I have to use Huxley's techniques in order to get the audience remembering the title of my book, Trickle Down Tyranny. I'm not going to give it out anymore unless you know the name. But from now on, if you want a free book, when I say if you name it, you gain it, you have to say Trickle Down Tyranny. So write it down. And remember, I'm using all the techniques of Huxley and Orwell right now. Isn't that terrible?
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
We all have experiences that shake our faith. There are times where we have questions for God's plan relative to us. But that's precisely when we should remember Christ's own doubts and... eventually,
what's the whisper in the doubts?
Jesus told us as much in the
Let
book
Let me ask
of John.
You something. Would you trust anyone who has Al Sharpton in the White House? Would you trust anyone to be telling you the truth who invites a street radical, an agitator, to an Easter prayer breakfast? I wouldn't. So here we are, 1-800-449. You know the number. You know the book. You know the website. I got a pair of shoes to sell you, a floor mat, medication to give you a male enhancement. Hair growth. It's getting frightening. It's all about race now. Wherever I turn, it's race. Now I wake up and I see that the Democrats are blacklisting Walmart and Coke. Now, why are they blacklisting Walmart and Coca-Cola? Why? What does Coca-Cola have to do with anything? According to the wonderful, fine, upstanding citizens in the Congressional Black Caucus, they're leading a campaign against Coca-Cola and Walmart because these companies apparently want America not to be controlled by illegal aliens. In other words, they want voter ID laws put in place. Every poll shows that most Americans back voter ID laws. But the Congressional Black Caucus says that they are equal to segregation, and they want this knocked out. They want no voter ID laws. Now, why would black leaders not want voter ID laws? The only people who benefit from that are illegal aliens who are not citizens. They're the only ones who benefit from no voter ID laws. What's intriguing to me is that I feared this would happen. I feared that the way he would rig the election, steal the election really, was through illegal aliens. I feared that. I said it to you at least 9 months ago, then 6 months ago, it's as though my prediction is coming true. And I want to talk about it. I have said to you that this is the most corrupt administration in our history. I've told it to you over and over again on my radio show. I've said that Barack Obama is presiding over the most corrupt administration in this country's history. I said he's bringing Chicago-style strong-arm politics to Washington. You've heard that before, right? Well, here's a little fact for you. It came and went real quickly. This is why he's sure he's going to win the election. This is why he whispered to Medvedev with the closed mic, when I'm reelected. This is why he said when I'm reelected again the other day. You want the answer? It's found in four paragraphs on page 25 of Trickle Down Tyranny. How many predictions have I made in this country in any of my speeches or books that were right? Many, correct? Well, unfortunately, I'm right again. Page 25, Trickle Down Tyranny. You won't see it in any other book. You ready for it? Did you hear that the Obama administration has sold the rights to processing our election results to a private company? That this critical component of a free election, the transparent tabulation of votes, will now be handled not by individual precincts, but by a company over which we will have little control. Did you know about that? SOE, a U.S. elections results processing company, which has handled processing election results from over 500 American jurisdictions, has typically provided prompt reporting of precinct-level results. However, SOE was recently acquired by SCYTL, a vote processing company based in Spain. In Spain. And this compromises the process enormously. Instead of producing election results trackable at the precinct level, votes will be transmitted to a central server where they will be counted. The problem is that once the votes are merged, it will be impossible to go back and check their integrity at the local level. I conclude this on page 25 with this. It is very likely that this is the final step in Barack Obama's corruption of the voting process. It has the promise of enabling him and his cohorts to control the outcomes of federal elections with no accountability. On top of that, it's one more step toward the formation of a global government. One of the aims of George Soros, whose puppet currently occupies the White House. Did you know that both Barack and Michelle Obama voluntarily gave up their law licenses and are not permitted to practice law in the United States? Why did he do that? It's the same sort of voluntary surrender that Bill Clinton made after he lied under oath. Are you aware of just how extensive the corruption was when Obama turned stimulus money? Well, I'm not going to read you the whole book. You bought the book. You're going to buy the book. However many sell. I would say to you that the story about vote rigging is the most important thing you can show to your so-called liberal wife, liberal husband, liberal child, because it's the end of freedom in America. Did you hear what I said? Do you think I made this up? Who owns SCYTL, a vote processing company based in Spain? Anybody who can find out who was on the board of directors and call the show, I will give you three books. I will give you Trickle Down Tyranny, I will give you Abuse of Power, and I'll give you Trickle Up Poverty. If anyone can crack the code and tell me who this company is, who controls it, who owns it, you get three free books today. Everyone else who gets on the air, who has a good story to tell, will be getting a free copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. So I have a few questions for you on the Savage Nation. You remember when Bush was president? Remember? And remember when the liberals who went out of business did nothing but Bush bashing day in and day out, and people got fed up with it, and we in the conservative media would say, God, how can they get away with this? Why are they bashing Bush? It's boring. Can't they do anything else, right? Well, do you think that my criticizing Obama on a daily basis, do you think my writing a book where I show you in black and white with reference after reference after reference, do you think it's boring? Do you think it's necessary? Or do you think it's racist of me to even criticize the president? Do you think any criticism of Obama is based upon the fact that he is has an African father? Because I've seen reviews on Amazon.com that were positive. Then I saw the plants from the Democrat machine saying, oh, here's another guy who's hateful that there's a black guy in the White House and I don't like it. Savage repeatedly and falsely accuses the president of engaging and promoting socialist policies. Am I right or wrong? Who's right, me or this plant of the government? because others love the book. They're saying, just finished chapter one, as with a lobster and steak dinner, I will keep eating. I certainly know why I've always called Michael the bullseye man. Others say Michael is the true voice of the American people. His book, Trickle Down Tyranny, is the best laid out plan to get the country back. I don't want to read you the reviews. I can't read things on the air. You know, it's an interesting thing about radio, that when I read things, I lose my energy. I do spontaneous shows. I can't read even from my own book without losing energy. Would you believe it? It's a funny thing. It's one of these days I'll do a seminar on broadcasting, since I'm probably good at it. Consider I'm good at it. Never went to school for it. I'm a natural. Either you know how to walk on a tightrope or you don't. You can go to all the classes in the world and you're never going to be a great tightrope artist. But one of the things you got to understand is that talk radio has to be spontaneous to be good. People will turn off if you're reading something. I don't care if it's a bill in the Senate or even from your own book, no matter how scintillating it is. They want to hear the natural palabar. They want to hear you talk. They want to hear what you have to say. They want to hear it man to woman, woman to man. They want to hear it human to human. It's as simple as that. So it goes back to the first questions, which is, Democrats boycott Coke and Walmart. Why are they boycotting Coke and Walmart over voter ID laws when most Americans understand that there's voter fraud, massive voter fraud? And the second question is, why are black leaders in favor of voter fraud? I don't quite understand that. There's only one conclusion you can draw. There's another element, the race. Race. Everywhere you turn, it's racist now, racism. Everywhere you turn, they're steaming up like almost a race war. Why would this man invite Al Sharpton into the White House when the man is known to be a lowlife of the lowest order? Al Sharpton is a street agitator. Al Sharpton is a lowlife, in my opinion. Why would he be invited in the White House? How does that help the president get reelected with white people? Did you hear what I said? You want to make it racial? Let's make it racial. Let's make it racial. He's making it racial every day. And I'm going to say something now that is not that shocking. But I thought about something that hit me like 3 a.m. I woke up like in a shock. I said, here is a man, Barry Obama. He had a white mother and he had an African father, not an African-American father. And then a bell went off in my head. Because all the African people I've met in my life, I haven't met thousands, but I've met dozens in my life. African people who come to this country are usually very pro-American. They seem to love the country, but more importantly, they don't have a grudge. They don't have that attitude of anger and hatred and resentment, and you owe me. Africans have a whole different attitude. So where does Obama get off with playing the race card when his ancestors were never slaves? I don't know anyone who's ever seen this before. Am I making sense to you? Don't you understand it's all an act? He's taken on the mantle of the angry guy who has grievances against America. His dad was from Africa, God bless him. His mother was a white lady. So where's the resentment about slavery in him? Where is this coming from? He's using it as a tool, as he used it to get into the White House.
Savage.
I really want to hear, you know what song I like? The Syncopated Clock. I'm in the mood for that. I used to watch The Late Show when I was a kid after school. My father, I would, you know that story, right? So you don't even know what's going on. The people are so stupid in this country. I don't know whether to just run out of the country and... Am I watching The Late Show? Is this some horror show I'm watching? Has there been a revolution and you don't even know it? Have radicals taken over America? Are they screwing you left and right, north, south, east, and west? Officials from Egypt's Brotherhood are in the White House? So in other words, they're now... What? Wait a minute. Islamists are in the White House? They put Mubarak in prison. They killed Gaddafi. They're backing Islamists in Syria, and you don't see 2 and 2. You can't put 2 and 3 together and come up with 4. Play Syncopated Clock, because I... Don't know any. Is this reality or fantasy? They want vote fraud. They're boycotting companies like Coca-Cola and Walmart who are against voter fraud. And you don't see a revolution having occurred in this White House and he gets away with this on a daily basis? Why? I blame the Republicans. Check pants, white guys with golf clubs in their spine.
the men who have no backbone. They have golf balls in their back. John Boehner. Let him get another lucky strike and a pink tie and start crying on the floor of the Senate. I can't take it anymore. They should be screaming from a rooftop. America would listen. But for some reason, they don't want to say a word. No, no, it's go along, get along. Rip them off. Rip them off. Dip your beak. Dip your beak. Both parties, dip the old beak. There is so much money in this country being stolen on a daily basis. Every time I walk through San Francisco, I say, how could people not see this? And here's one city. There's one Medicare fraud clinic after another. Here I am, an ordinary citizen. Every other storefront is another here to serve the Chinese community, here to serve this community. What do you mean serve? They have brand new cars pulling up to the Unlock Senior Center. Where do these trucks and vans come from? Who pays for this? And I see children ushered in and out of these clinics all day long. I'm the only one who sees it. I mean, Medicare doesn't have an inspector general who walks around in a city and sees these things. All right. What does it have to do with Obama? Oh, nothing. Nothing. Nothing to do with the Democrat machine. Nothing whatsoever. So I'll take your calls on all of these topics and more. Play the syncopated clock and let me reset myself. News hires Jesse Jackson's daughter. That's no doubt because she has a PhD in journalism and because she has such a keen insight into the world. Black caucus blames racial bias for the Trayvon shooting, even though the shooter was not white. Oh, a TSA screener JFK hurled hot coffee at pilot who told her to stop swearing. Well, it was probably a racist incident. The only reason she threw the hot coffee is the pilot was no doubt a racist. She had every right to be outraged and throw hot coffee at him. I'm sure that there'll be a meeting in Congress over this. Oh, here it is. I was right. TSA Administrator Letitia E. was in the middle of a conversation with work colleagues at the JFK Airport when she was interrupted by an American Airlines pilot. Off-duty airman Stephen Trivett, 50, was exiting Terminal 8 when he overheard E.I. swearing and asking her to tone down the profanity. Who ever heard of a last name that's E.I.? What does it mean? Trivett of Butler, Tennessee, told them they should conduct themselves more professionally in uniform and not use profanity or the N-word. One TSA screener told Trivett to mind his own business and swore at him. Trivett then identified himself as a TSA officer and armed pilot before trying to grab the ID tags of screener EI to get her name. But EI responded by hurling a full cup of hot coffee over the pilot. Have you been at the TSA recently in Washington, D.C.? It looks like Egypt. People feel like they're going through a screening in Egypt. I can't say things I would say if it was... It's not national radio. This thing could do a live performance. I'd say a few things right now. But here we are. So I would be sitting there listening to the syncopated clock, watching the early show after a hard day at school. Mom would put out the TV tray. She'd make me a nice low-cholesterol dinner. Let's say a rib steak, French fried potatoes, followed up with another low-cholesterol dessert, like a cherry vanilla ice cream. Dad would be coming home from his little store. He'd walk in the door around 6:30, white as a ghost from exhaustion, from the ride from Manhattan. He'd come in there. There's his worst nightmare in front of him. His man-child in the promised land, plump, fat, weak, like a little piglet sitting there being force-fed a cholesterol-rich diet. And he'd say to Mom, are you kidding? You're gonna make the kid into a nothing. How dare, blah, 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 why are you catering to him? And they'd fight over it. He was wrong. She was right. Look where I am today. So I recommend that you feed your children high cholesterol diets and watch the early. What do you care about the old man? What do you care? Yeah, toughen him. Why do you have to toughen him up? Life was gonna toughen him up anyway. It doesn't really matter. I mean, childhood should be golden. Sometimes I look at my dogs. I have three of them now. Don't ask. I wish we didn't. But okay, that's the way it is now. There's Teddy. He's the senior citizen of the dog world. Then we got the Havanese, who I now call a Cuban bed potato. They ask what kind of dog is a little black and white Havanese. I say, oh, he's a Cuban bed potato. The guy, so he's like got a big walrus mustache on him. And he's like Mr. Goofy, like, hello, can I play? And Teddy's like 7 years old and like, oh, look, this is way beyond us now. Let's cut this out, this jumping up and down. Like as old as Teddy and she weighs a pound and she's half blind and, you know, you got to feel bad for her. She like walks into things and you got to pick her up. She's the little mini poodle, but everything's wrong with her. So that's the menagerie in the house. But the Havanese, the Cuban bed potato is a cute little dog, I got to tell you. But sometimes I look at the Cuban bed potato and Teddy, the little poodle, and I see them lying in their dog beds. And they look just like children do when they're young, like 2-3 years old. The innocence in their faces. And I say, it's beautiful. That's why we have our dogs, innocence. Then at night I go and turn on National Geographic, and there I see a pack of chimpanzees in a forest in Africa sleeping in the afternoon after they went out hunting for whatever, bananas. And they're resting on the forest floor last night. And I said, look how beautiful they are. I said, boy, before I was in radio, I used to nap in the afternoon. Look what I'm doing now. I don't know whether I would have lived longer or shorter, but I'm not napping in the afternoon. I'm doing the talk show, you know, with 50,000 volts an hour here coming out of me. Then they're napping there, the chimpanzees, and I'm enjoying it after playing with the dogs. All of a sudden they say, but the alpha male notices something in the canopy of the trees, and they're off and running after it. Now the entire pack is chasing the monkey in the tree. And I say, oh, God, no. No, I don't want to watch it. He is jumping from branch to branch, but they have him cut off. He doesn't stand a chance. The next scene is they're eating the thing alive. Well, they don't cook. The chimps have not yet learned how to, like, use a microwave. So they tear him limb to limb. They rip off his head. And they're knocking off a monkey, a live monkey that 2 minutes before looked like my dog. I pick the dog up, and I look at him. I realize how ethereal it all is and crazy. You understand what I'm saying to you? Like in that minute you realize again that what life really is, like tick, 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 how precious it is. Well, that's how precious freedom is to me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I've lived through some historic times in my life. You won't believe this. And here they are. Look what I have seen in my lifetime. I want to show you how long I've been around this planet so you're going to get a feeling of what I've seen in my lifetime. One, Superman defeated by every man in World War II. Two, the first atomic bomb used in warfare, the establishment of the State of Israel, the popularization of television. This is all in my lifetime. The popularization of air conditioning, the popularization of air travel, the popularization of the personal computer, the invention of the Internet, the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr. I've seen the first man walk on the moon. I've seen the mainstreaming of homosexuality. I've seen the complete integration of blacks and whites. I've seen the development of mass welfare for unproductive citizens. I've seen the destruction of America's judicial system by corrupt lawyers. I've seen the meltdown of America's borders. I've seen the acceptance of narcotics. I've seen the debasement of religion. I've seen the takeover of corporations by gamblers and con men. I've seen the elimination of grades in many schools. I've seen the introduction of racial quota systems. I've seen the impeachment of a president. What will I see in the future? Well, that's for you to decide, not me.
Savage.
Fire, brawlers, a charred and barbecued ribs. You get the treat of the week. For when you dig that real fire.
that you think is appropriate for AM radio in this day and age, or is there something controversial? Should anyone who speaks about Braving the World in 1984 be banned from American radio? In fact, we should talk about nothing but drugs, sex, and rock and roll. I mean, that's the those are the approved topics. In the new American media landscape, drugs, sex, and rock and roll are considered the kosher subjects. Anything else is considered, well, controversial, and you don't want controversy. Better to be a dirt mouth, a filth mouth. Why, then you get invited to the Academy Awards in the White House. Why, then Republican candidates come to you and have you on their campaign stumps with them. Drugs, sex, and rock and roll pay. That's the new America. Now, if you dare talk about patriotism, if you dare talk about the Constitution, that's the equivalent of pornography today. Anyone who mentions the U.S. Constitution is a dangerous radical, by the way. Anyone who's a constitutionalist should be investigated by the TSA and thrown off the radio, frankly. There's no room for the Constitution anymore, not in Obama's America, because the usurper-in-chief has demanded a consolidation of power never before seen in American history. What is consolidation? Well, you have to turn to page 41 of Trickle Down Tyranny, and I'll read you a paragraph. Consolidation is a tactic employed by leftists and other fascistic political groups once they gain a foothold in order to bring more and more of the decision-making power normally granted to the states and private enterprise, where those powers should lawfully reside, under the control of the federal government through unchecked regulation and behind closed doors policy decisions. In doing this, Obama is remaking this country in his own image, turning it into something that reflects the belief system he was brainwashed into accepting by the leftist mentors of his youth. Now, I'm not going to read any more from the book, but I'm telling you, Trickle-Down Tyranny is the sin qua non of political books. You're never going to want another one after this. Nothing will match it. And it's the last chance we're going to have to expose the Leninist in the White House and what his plans are. When I woke up and turned the TV on today and I saw him talking about 4 million jobs, I said, he's lying. He's nakedly lying. I mean, I know politicians invent things. That's not a shock to me. But to see him so boldly lying about the 4 million jobs and how shadowy his face becomes and how what a sort of self-satisfaction he gets when he lies. His face tilts up. He gets that Mussolini-like jaw as he gulps, as he knows he got away with another whopper. There's almost nothing you can talk about that would not offend someone, so therefore, why talk at all? In fact, in the future society, there should be no conversation except scripts given out by a big sis and her minions. They'll give you a morning script on your iPhone that is gender, race, and sex neutral that you can then talk about. Only these 50 words will be permitted in the workplace, and in fact in your home, or else your children will be asked to report you. If you speak outside these 50 words permitted by the Department of Homeland Security, it will trigger an alarm system in their computers, and you'll be visited by someone in green. That's why I'm talking about Braving the World in 1984. I think it's a worthy topic. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I've asked the questions. John in New York, you're first up on WOR. John, go ahead, please.
Michael, it's a pleasure to speak to you. And remember, a gram is better than a dam. That's right out of Brave New World.
Oh, a gram is better than a dam. You mean a gram of soma. That's funny.
Exactly.
I think, isn't that the motto of Hollywood at the Academy Awards?
It probably is. It's probably the motto of the people on the Upper West Side, too, when they have their parties.
It's certainly the motto of most of the people in the Democrat establishment. We can tell that just by their behavior. But what's on your mind today?
I just called to concur with your coming to the conclusion that we're getting closer and closer to the type of world in Brave New World. Take the instance of the lady down in Georgetown, the lawyer. Pretty soon we'll be issuing Malthusian belts because contraception is a right. It's for free. It just gets handed out to you. There you go.
No, don't drag me into that one. I'm not going there. Don't make me into you-know-who, and I'm not going to also become Rick Santorum and talk about prophylaxis. But the fact of the matter is, we have politicians with a lust for power unlike any I've ever seen in modern times in this country. Certainly we've seen politicians with a lust for power before, especially in dictatorships as we see around the world today. But have you ever seen a president so in love with himself and with such a lust for power as we have now? What did you see in his looks? Did you see his face? Am I the only one who saw Obama's face? Am I the last person in America who saw his eyes become shaded,
his face go up like Mussolini at an angle as he gripped his jaw, as he looked down on the peons who were there in uniforms saluting him. I felt like I was living in some China, like a third world dictatorship. How could the networks distribute such a program? You talk about an obscenity. I thought that was worse than watching Triple X pornography. The bald-faced lies about 4 million jobs was more pornographic. Listen to clip 20. This is Obama. Our military will be leaner. Listen to this.
So, yes, our military will be leaner, but the world must know the United States is going to maintain our military superiority with armed forces that are agile.
You know what? He can't even say the word. He can't even lie anymore. He'd stumble on the word superiority. You got to understand, this guy hates the U.S. military. He has a vendetta to destroy the military. That's all he wants to do. And with the kind of leadership that we don't have in politics and the lack of leadership we have in the military because they've all been culled out, they've been thrown out of the military if one of them showed any signs of testosterone. They're just like Romney. The entire leadership in the U.S. military may as well be Mitt Romney. I'm telling you, that's what it looks like to me. When have you seen a vociferous guy like a, never mind a Patton, a MacArthur? Nobody. They don't exist. They're all get-along, go-along kind of corporate guys. They'll do whatever the president says without a word, without a peep out of them. Now, you're saying, well, what would you do about the fact that we're broke and we can't afford the military? Well, that's an intriguing question. Number one, what you got to do is cut back on the medical care for the entire family of every military person. It's medical care, medical care, medical care that is killing this country. There's an entitlement mentality about what you are entitled to from a government or from a union that is out of touch with reality. Nobody has ever been afforded this level of care in the history of the world because nobody can afford this. This entitlement for medical care pharmaceuticals is what's killing not only the country, but killing the military. That's what I believe. And then I want to talk about pensions for a minute because, you know, right now it's very popular to bash public employee pensions. And I'm all for it, but not with regard to cops. I thought about it in great detail. And, you know, you say, well, look, we can't afford these pensions for cops. I would separate out the police pensions. I would certainly crack down on the corrupt police who spend the last few months of the last year building up their pension with a fake illness. I would crack down on that. I wouldn't cut police pensions. I'll tell you why. If you ever looked at the weaponry that the thugs, the gangbangers are carrying in the streets of this country, if you ever looked at the fact that they outgun our police, you've got subhuman morons in the streets of these cities with submachine guns, 223s that could penetrate a police car, and our poor police are running around with a 40 caliber handgun with maybe 12 or 14 shots in it. You've got gangbangers boasting that the police are running away from them because they outgun them. And you're telling me the police are not entitled to their pensions? You are wrong. Why don't you strap on a police uniform one day and take a ride through one of these neighborhoods? Because you've got a war going on in the streets of America. And frankly, we need more than police. We need the U.S. military in the streets of America.
Savage.
Talk Radio Network. One, you're an independent syndicator. Two, I work with the best team in talk radio. They know me. They're like my friends, all the guys in the back room. It's unbelievable to me. This is a family. This is a team. We are the Yankees of talk radio.
Wait, hang on. Before I go, back in September, we all paused to remember the 9/11 attacks. That one day changed the very way we all live and think. In fact, the Red Cross now recommends that we have a surplus of food in case of disaster, weather, or power outages. That's why I recommend and personally use WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com provides affordable and complete delicious ready-made meals for emergencies or even camping. I know more about food than anybody in radio. I have a PhD from the University of California in nutrition. These foods are nutritionally sound for good health. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com. Get a free entree sample by entering the promo code SAVAGE, and then you'll get free shipping on any order. SAVAGE. WiseFoodStorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE, and be sure to mention SAVAGE for a free sample and free shipping on any order. Be wise and be ready with WiseFoodStorage.com.
Savage.
Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome. What's on your mind?
You know, you're the quintessential analyst, so I have a question I've wanted to ask you for years. Do you see any redeeming value in the liberals? I can't find one, but
yes, Now this is going to surprise you. You ask, do I, Michael Savage, arch conservative, see any redeeming value in liberalism? Correct.
That I can't find one.
Yes, the answer is yes, I do. And you'd say, well, he's going to say something sarcastic now. No, I won't. Rational liberalism is a very important break upon the excesses that might arise in an all-too-powerful bureaucracy or government. The problem is liberalism today has detached itself from its original libertarian roots and has become somewhat totalitarian in that it wants government to impose restrictions on people, restrictions, for example, of what you can say, what you can read, what you can speak. And they should control, liberals should control what you read, what you say, and what you speak. So that's the problem with phony liberalism. True liberalism would curtail the tendency towards an overreaching government, but in a rational manner. They wouldn't, for example, override a conviction against a terrorist from Algeria found with dynamite or explosives and timers in his trunk, would they? That's not rational liberalism. That's insanity, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, an overriding IRS needs to be curtailed by somebody. An overriding any government agency needs to be controlled, or else it will take over your whole life. We don't want that. We don't want an overriding governmental power. What is government? It's people. People will abuse power if they're granted unlimited power. So we have to be very careful to not give any governmental agency unlimited power. On the other hand, there has to be a rationale in liberalism, and I don't see any rationale. There's no balance left in it. Thanks for the call.
Savage.
John, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yes, your comments on sugar hit right to the sweet tooth of huge issues. And I have neighbors, and I watch, you know, they have kids, and I watch them use candy and sweets and
Oreo. It's unbelievable to me, John. We have an epidemic of obesity and diabetes, and the idiots never say it's connected to a sugar, and more sugar. The sugar epidemic in America is at an all-time high. When have you last seen anyone in the media say diabetes and sugar combine the two? Never. Because either they don't know or they're afraid to antagonize their advertisers. You understand?
Yeah, and I see some people who think that they're being good with not giving their kids candy will make them a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something, but they don't look at the label on the jelly and realize...
That's unbelievable. The mothers of today are the biggest ignoramuses with regard to feeding children. I was one of the pioneers in writing books in the 70s on feeding children and on nutrition for children, and the mothers then knew an awful lot about raising children sanely. There was a huge movement against sugar, owing to Dr. Feingold, who wrote about hyperactivity and sugar. Children were suffering from hyperactivity mood disorders, and it was traced directly to their diets. And many mothers learned it, and they took their kids off sugary foods and put them on other foods. They took them off foods with dyes in them. There was a huge movement. The children were beneficiaries of that. When have you last seen one of the mothers who care so much about children, like Hillary Clinton or Nancy Pelosi, for that matter, talk about diet and children? Never. They don't know anything about it. The fact of the matter is, all of this has been lost because of industry pressures. Thanks for the call. I'm a fanatic on sugars because I suffered migraine headaches through my youth and my teen years to the point of almost debilitating migraine headaches. I had to lock myself in dark rooms until the pain went away. It was overwhelming. I have a very minor migraine right now. You know why? I cheated on my diet. You know what I did last night? I sat like a slob in a sedentary manner. I hate myself for it. And I ate a piece of chocolate. No, I'm going to admit it to you. I have no idea. See, once you start going down the slobola line and sit and watch television, you're going to want to then degenerate your diet. The next step is God knows what. I did. I ate a piece of chocolate. I have a smashing migraine from it. I know what I shouldn't do. But like everyone else, sometimes I do. I normally enjoy very good health because I've eaten very well most of my life. I'm a moderate exerciser. Very moderate. Never had a joint break. Never had surgery on a joint. Because I don't run, I bicycle. Running is one of the most dangerous exercises ever invented for the human body.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Now, I want to move on to a different topic. There was a great article in the New York Times, in the Sunday Times, called The Falling Down Professions. And it's about doctors and lawyers who wish they were not. It says that about a fifth of the associates in large law firms in any given year drop out of large law firms, and 20% of lawyers overall will suffer depression at some point in their careers. It says as of 2006, nearly 60% of doctors polled by the American College of Physician executives said they had considered getting out of medicine because of low morale in doctors now, and nearly 70% knew someone who already had left medicine. A lot of them don't like medicine anymore because they've been turned into paper pushers. Law and medicine, we read, have always been very demanding, but they were prestigious in the past. They made good money. They had authority. They were perched atop the other professions. Everybody thought being a doctor or a lawyer was the greatest thing to be. But we realize today that they've lost their allure and their status, and it is not about money. They say that the pay is still good, people know that. But they say something is missing, say many doctors, lawyers, and career experts, and that is the old sense of purpose, of respect, of living at the center of American society, and in essence embodying its definition of what is success, that is being a doctor or a lawyer. So what is going on? Is multifaceted as to why people are feeling these things. In fact, applications to law schools and medical schools have declined from recent highs. The number of law school applicants dropped from 98,000 in 2004 to 83,000 in 2006. And that was on top of a 5% slip the year before. How about medical schools? Remember how hard it used to be to get into a medical school? In 97, there were 46,000 applicants. It's now 42,000. So what are youngsters who are intelligent doing now? Well, I guess they all want to be a web designer or something like that. Some still go into these fields because of the higher calling of the profession of being a doctor or a lawyer, and they don't care about the social cachet. They care about doing you know, good for society. But for a brief segment right now, are there any doctors or lawyers out there who wish they were not? Or are there any former doctors or lawyers who left their professions and went into something else? If you care to call us at 1-800-449-8255, you can do so. And I'm doing this because I want young people to see if they can learn something from your call. Would you recommend that they do become a lawyer or a doctor? Now, let's start with money. Money is what we're all interested in. Do you know that associates at major New York law firms start at $150,000 to $180,000 a year? That's right, at a law school. Partners at the country's biggest 100 firms took home an average of $1.2 million in 2006. Now, that's paltry compared to talk show hosts, but nevertheless, it's a lot for the professions other than the media. So outside of the media, they're making very good money. Many senior investment bankers, through bonuses and salaries, will average $2.25 million to $2.75 million. Doctors, whether you know it or not, vary in income tremendously. A typical physician might earn $150,000 to $300,000. A surgeon, $250,000 to $400,000. A top surgeon can earn $750,000 a year, and a superstar surgeon, $1 million or more a year. That's not really a lot of money for the kind of skill set that they have when you think about that. But something is going on. Things are going on. And what is it that's going on? Well, I don't really know what's going on. I have a feeling it's because of the control that the doctors and lawyers have lost. The lawyers have lost control of their lives in terms of the hours they have to put in. The doctors have lost control to the HMOs who make them, you know, call up a clerk to get permission to assign a wheelchair to a person with a muscular dystrophy. The doctors are also very upset with men like John Edwards, the biggest fraud in the history of the election I've ever seen, a man who built his fortune through lawsuits based upon fraudulent documentation and moronic audiences in the Ozarks. I don't know how he gets away with this. I know how. He's got idiots in the media who won't challenge him. and say, look, Mr. Edwards, you say you're for change and you're an independent, but you're a crook, basically. You're a crooked lawyer who made all of his money lying to dumb juries without teeth in the Ozarks. You told him that a person who was born with a congenital disease was made this way by a doctor's mistake, Mr. Edwards. Aren't you ashamed of yourself? John Edwards, have you no shame? Well, you see, I'm not in the major media in that sense, or I'd ask him those questions. Now, you know why Obama won't come on the show, or why Edwards won't come on the show, but aren't you shocked that Giuliani won't come on the show when he's desperate for votes and you are his audience? Aren't you shocked that Romney's idiots who run his campaign aren't smart enough to know that this is the gold mine, this is the mother lode of independent voters? Aren't you shocked that they don't know that? Or is it that they got something to hide and they're afraid of a little truth? So anyway, the question to you is the falling down professions of lawyers or doctors. These are not my opinions. I have nothing against lawyers or doctors per se. It was a great article in the New York Times that I thought was worthy of airing on the Savage Nation today. And I'm asking you, if you're a doctor or a lawyer who wishes you were not, why not? Or what would you say to a youngster? Would you recommend that they become a doctor or a lawyer? Let's begin in the land of lawyers in New York City on WOR. Tom, welcome. Go ahead, please.
I'm Michael, how are you? I've
Good.
Been a lawyer for about 8 years now, graduated from a law school in New York, was born and raised in New York, and my advice to a youngster who was in college or prior to college determining whether or not they'd like to be a lawyer, my advice to them would be to go a different route. And it boils down, in my opinion, to or my experience, I should say, is it's not what I thought it was going to be when I entered college and entered law school. The money is good. I'd rather not say where I'm employed, but I do work.
No, I understand. Well, what is it about law that grates you, makes you depressed, frankly? It just doesn't make you happy.
Well, quite frankly, I'm a litigator, and I specialize in commercial litigation as well as plaintiffs' personal injury work, which you routinely call slip and fall lawyers.
All right, whatever. Forget what I say in my characterizations. You know, we all use lawyers whether we like them or not. But the fact of the matter is there's something in the profession you don't like, and what is it?
It's just a game. It's just a big game. It's whoever has the best poker face wins, especially with personal injury litigation. It's not what you know. It's who you know.
All right. In other words, yeah, right. In other words, what system, like what judge system you're in or whatever. But, I was shocked to read about 10 years ago that justice and law are not one and the same. In fact, justice has nothing to do with the law. That's fundamentally, you probably went in as a kid thinking that you were going to bring justice to issues, right?
I thought for certain I was going to do right by clients and remedy wrongs that were done to my clients. And at the end of the day, some clients are happy, other clients are not happy. And sometimes it's outside of my control. I do what I do.
In other words, cases get decided for reasons other than justice.
The time. Cases get decided sometimes because, the judge and the attorney know each other very, very well. Cases get decided.
I once had an arbitration in New York City many, many years ago before I was in radio. I hired some shyster lawyer in New York. Cost me a lot of money, which I really had to scrape together. And during the break, I happened to be in the stall in the bathroom, and the lawyer I hired didn't know I was in there. You know what's coming, don't you? He went in the bathroom. I overheard him talking to the opposing attorney, and they worked a deal out on my behalf. Can you believe this? Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yes, I can believe that because it happened.
I was in an arbitration against the corrupt vitamin company from Long Island at the time. They should be visited upon the fifth generation, the crooks that they were. Thanks for the call. Dallas, Texas. John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm a board-certified anesthesiologist in the Metroplex, and I have a lot of problems with my profession.
Well, wait. Now, first of all, anesthesiologists are at the top of their profession in terms of earnings. Isn't that still true?
It is true.
So what does an anesthesiologist earn in dollars, and not what you make, but generally, what's the approximate income?
$300,000 to $350,000 a year.
But what is the problem that you have with your specialty, or is it with the field of medicine in general?
Well, first about my specialty, I have unqualified nurses who try to legislate that they can do the same job as I can. I have government regulations which every day put more separation between me and my patient's relationship, to deal with socialistic colleagues who want to usher in an era of Obama politics, which will destroy
yeah.
our medicine.
So in other words, you're saying you're no longer a doctor. In essence, they're turning you into something less than the doctor in the room, the bureaucrat. It's very much like a soft communism. That's what you're really saying, because when Mao Zedong took over China, he took the surgeons out of the surgery. He put them in the laundry room if he didn't shoot them. And he took untrained laundresses and put them in the surgery. And he said, you do the surgery. And if they said they couldn't, he said, you're a counter-revolutionary. And he had them shot. That's more or less what's happening in America, isn't it?
That's exactly what's happening with these nurses. And furthermore, what's happening is we have the socialized government using the mid-level professionals to try to take out the doctors through class warfare and jealousy. They look up to us. They want to tear us down to regulations. They want to make everyone the lowest common denominator.
Isn't that terrible? It's awful. And, of course, the patient is at risk as a result of that, of using ignoramuses. You mean they're making decisions as to what kind of anesthesia to give and in what dose?
Now, nurse anesthetists work underneath anesthesiologists in a beautiful model. But some of them want to fight for independence when they are nowhere near as qualified.
And I get it. So the nurse practitioner now wants to become an anesthesiologist.
Basically, yes, sir.
Okay, and the HMOs would like that because they can pay them less than they pay you.
They would love it, and it's a perfect class warfare. Who wants to fight against nurses or when you have the big bad doctors to go against? It's really
terrible. Oh, my God. So it's the socialized medicine that's killing the medical field.
It is, and it's not about the money. I do really well. I want to be one-on-one with my patients. I don't want some joker from above or below telling me how to treat my patients. I want to be able to take my patient, treat them one-on-one, and have a close relationship. But because of the bureaucrats, I can't do that.
I hear you, my friend. Thanks. This is a very enlightening topic. But we're finding out that 60% of doctors polled said they had considered getting out of medicine because of low morale. Can you hear this?
Savage.
An immigrant. Yeah, he came here when he was 13 or 7. I don't even know. He was not born here. I was born here, and he was a citizen when I was born here. I'm not an anchor baby. Don't get me wrong. I'm not an anchor baby. But I have one foot in the old world and one foot in the new world, so I really speak from, let's say, a knowledgeable position about it. I understand what it's like to live in a poor household with many people. Trust me, we lived in a place. We didn't even have a bedroom in the Bronx. And I think about it. There was one bedroom, and there was a tiny living room with a fake fireplace. And I remember we hung fake stockings on the fake fireplace. I thought Santa would give me a gift. So, you know, part in the old world, part in the new world. My grandmother didn't speak a word of English in the house. She spoke the old languages from the old country. I couldn't believe it. I'm thinking about it now. And she was so wonderful. Oh, did I love her. God, did I love that woman. She was so beautiful. Very stoic, very, very Russian, this woman. She spoke to me in Russian, by the way. I don't think you know that. I never told you that. I am not a Russian language speaker, but it's strange. I can understand the language to a certain extent. And it's a very hard language for an American to learn, incidentally. It's not an easy language. The alphabet's very complicated for an English speaker. I can just imagine how hard English is to learn for a Spanish speaker, by the way. It's not an English is a tough language, incidentally. Very tough. But in my home, my parents spoke only English. So to make a long story short, here I am, man-child in the promised land. And when my turn came to assume my mantle in this country and my chosen profession, they said white men need not apply. The positions are closed. So you can understand where I was coming from. So to make a long story short, I cut a virgin demo in 1993, and I sent it out to about 220 radio stations. I get a return from about 5 to 10 of them. And 5 of them say, that's really good stuff. Would you like to work on our station? I remember to this day, one of them was in Boston, of all places. I don't remember the station that said, we like what you did. But nevertheless, I was living in San Francisco, as I am now, and one of them came from a local station, and the guy says to me, good stuff. Would you like to come on in and talk to us? And then they gave me a fill-in. Anyway, here's the Virgin Demo, 1993, Savage's Virgin Demo, play 01.
direct from the towers above Manhattan. It's the Michael Savage Show. To the right of Rush and to the left of God. And now, Michael Savage.
I'm glad I can be with you 7 nights a week because these stories are just not going away. I mean, every day in every way we're getting assaulted. Look at these questions before us today. Look at the questions before us. You know, they say that I'm to the right of Rush and to the left of God. I really don't think that that's funny. I really don't think that's funny at all. Do immigrants carry diseases? Are lawyers really humans? Is white bread safe to eat? How come women with mustaches, with peace and love and turtle-saving bumper stickers are the most likely to cut you off on the hot seat, skinheads? KKK, don't call me. Crawl back into your bunkers. You've given true conservatives a bad name because you permit the sick leftists to paint all conservatives with the fascist brush, okay? Don't call me. Do Labor Secretary Reich's feet touch the ground when he's seated on talk shows? I don't know. But these are some of the questions that I think we have to answer here. Because
all right, let's pause. You see how daring this was? Do you see how good? Now you say, well, it's commonplace today. It was not commonplace in 1994, by the way. It was really daring. It broke open new ground. I changed the media landscape. And that's it. That's how I started. Then I did a show. I'll never forget it. I'm going to just tell you the story, and then we're going to move on because it's the anniversary. It was last week, and I blew through it because I was, you know, under the weather. I'll never forget it. So the local station manager calls me, and he says, would you like to fill in? I said, sure, I'll try it. Now, I had never done radio except on book tours. I had done 10 national book tours where you go around and do radio and television. They were very stressful. But along the way, I remember various program directors had said to me, you know, you're really good on the radio. You should consider a career in radio. I had no way. How could you get a job in radio? It was as real to me as becoming an astronaut. Of course I wanted to do it. I didn't know. How would you get into radio? It seemed as difficult as becoming an astronaut. I had no way to do it, so let me put it to you that way. But let me tell you something. Desperation breeds creativity, and creativity breeds a lot of you take a lot of chances. And anyway, this is it 15 years later. I think that fate had a hand in this and God. I think I really was set out to do this from the beginning. All right, so he says, fill in. All right, the first show I fill in for is on a liberal talk station in San Francisco. It's still there. It's a powerhouse, 50,000 water. And he gives me a show to fill in for that guy is on the overnight show, and he's a hater of the lowest order, hates white people, panders to the most, let's say a Reverend Wright type, as exactly a Reverend Wright, all night long hate radio against whites, against America. He himself, of course, is living the high life, as is Reverend Wright in his new $10 million house. You understand how it works. Curse America and go and laugh all the way to the bank. You know, yeah. All they needed was the Kool-Aid, like a Jim Jones job. So that's the kind of show I didn't know, really. I never listened to the cretin. I'm never up in the middle of the night. So he said, all right, I go on the air, and I start to tell about illegal immigrants and this and that. I get hate callers like I have never encountered in my life. Because remember what my last incarnation was. I was the good doctor. I was the nutritionist and the herbalist who gave lectures around the world. And by the way, I had even given a lecture. You'll never believe this story. I don't think I've told it. Normally, I would give lectures about health and vitamins and nutrition in America. At one point, I was director of nutrition for a major international nutrition company. They sent me to Malaysia to talk about their products. My audience were all Muslim women. So I go into the audience. I could not believe it. They were all Muslim women. They were a great audience. These were moderate Muslim women who were interested in nutritional supplements. They received it very well. I spoke, and it was translated. And so I had been all over the world doing lectures, and I was usually very well received. And frankly, I was like the beloved doctor kind of thing. Now I do talk radio, and I walk a propeller of hatred from the left.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I, years ago, you don't know this about me, so all of you leftists get ready for yet another true story that's going to blow away the stereotype of Michael Savage. It's an absolute true story. I've told it once in 14 years, and you got to hear the story just so you know where I'm coming from. The first year in graduate school, I was in pharmacology, and my job was I had to clean cages of mice. I never forget it as long as I lived. And I went into pharmacology. It was the first day the professor, he was an evil doctor, he said to me, your job is to pith the mice, kill them. First, I had to clean the crap out of the cage. And I remember hearing my deceased ancestor's voice saying to me, this is what we evolved for, so that you could be cleaning up the droppings of a rodent? I heard this in my head. It was like my ancestors were talking to me. See, I have a very unique relationship with my ancestors. They're all alive in my head when I want them to be. Which is what makes me such a deep person, by the way. Many people are afraid of these things. They think they're schizophrenic, or they got to suppress it with drugs. Trust me, if you know how to tap into your ancestry and talk to them when you want to and tune them out when you want to, you could become an amazing human being. I don't want to go into that now. So I'm cleaning the cage, and I hear whether it was my deceased father, and actually it couldn't be because he was still living. So it had to be another ancestor I never met. This is what we evolved for? Millions of years of evolution? So you should stick your hand into a cage and clean up mouse droppings? Said the voice. So I thought back and I said to the voice, why, you're going to pay my rent? I mean, who's going to pay my rent? I was making $300 a month in a fellowship at the time. So that shut up the voice pretty good because I had to make a buck and that's what I had to do. I didn't mind that. I hated it, but I had to do it. A few days later, this evil professor says to me, your job is also to kill the animals, in other words, pith the mouse's head. And he had a midget working for him. I'll never forget it as long as I live. A midget woman who was a sadistic woman. She was frightening because she smiled while she did it. She said, Michael, here's how you do it. You hold the mouse gently in your hand and make sure their head is between your thumb and forefinger and so it can't move. You insert the thing here and until you hear it pop and it's dead. So now I had a real conscience thing there because I said, I'm not killing these animals. I won't do it. So I went to the professor. I said, Professor, I can't do this. I'm not going to kill these animals. So he said to me, you have no choice. Either you kill the animals or I'm canceling your fellowship and you're out of graduate school. And he knew I was far away from home. I had no money. He was a real SOB, a real little, an evil guy. So I said, well, you'll have to cancel you'll have to do what you have to do. And he fired me, threw me out of the laboratory because I wouldn't kill mice, and I wouldn't do it. So what do I do? I didn't put my tail between my legs. I was 7,000 miles away from home. So I said, how could I stay in graduate school and not kill poor little innocent animals? I went over to the botany department, and I talked to the head of the botany department, and I got a fellowship in botany. That's actually how I got into botany, believe it or not. Would you believe it? You talk about fate. Sometimes you got to follow the river inside your own soul. I got to tell you that. And not worry about it. If you really follow that strong river inside your soul, you're always going to wind up on top, 99% of the time. It's a great story, but it's 1,000% true. So it doesn't make me like an animal rights wacko, although I'm not afraid to be called that, amongst other things. I eat animals, truthfully, as I've told you. I don't enjoy the slaughter of animals. I don't hunt animals, although I don't condemn those who do. It's just not my shtick. I didn't grow up hunting. You know, we didn't hunt animals in the Bronx. That's all. I mean, if you grow up doing it, God bless you. It makes you a good soldier and a good American. I didn't. It's just a different culture. I'm sure I know how to use a gun. I was on a rifle team, but I never envisioned shooting varmints with it. Who did I have in my mind when I was shooting the targets? Do you know that there was a rifle team in my high school? When I was a youth at Jamaica High School in Queens, New York, in the city of New York, we had a rifle team. Nobody picked up a gun and ran through the hall shooting anybody. Why? A, there was no antipsychotic medication. There was no Prozac. There was no Ritalin. Nobody was as crazy. By that point already in America, if you were crazy, you weren't in high school. You already were filtered out earlier on. By the fourth, fifth grade, they knew if you were a nut, and they put you into a nut house or something. I don't know. But you didn't get into high school. They filtered you out. They didn't ask questions. They said, who's that nut over there in the second row? What's he doing there reaching inside his trousers in the middle of a class on geometry? Get him out of here. They call the marshals and throw the kid out or whatever. They didn't ask any permission from some whack job psychotic criminal on, you know, with a medical degree whether they could throw him out. They threw him out. The lawyers, of course, were not out of control in those days either. But to get back to the story, so we had Mossberg 22 target rifles. To this day, I could remember being in the basement of that school, and all the teachers who taught riflery in my high school, remember now, we're talking New York City rifle team, right? I could smell the gunpowder. To this day, I can hear the shots being fired. We wore no earmuffs, so far as I know. And I would come up from that rifle experience. My head was clearer. I was able to focus better on school because I wasn't bored anymore. The report of the rifle, the smell of the gunpowder, the camaraderie, and more importantly, the men who taught us riflery were all World War II or Korean War veterans, every one of them. That's who was in teaching in those days. Compare it today to the Marvins that they get.
Savage.
So I gave you like 11 questions, and I'm getting basically the people who receive radio on their filling calling. No, I'm not. I'm starting to wonder who listens to talk radio anymore. I don't even know. The business is so hard to predict. You don't know anymore. I mean, I'm starting to wonder about this. I have no idea who is listening. Like, what are your favorite news websites other than Michael Savage? Which types sites have you stopped going to and why? Do you still read a physical newspaper? When you buy a book, you're going to buy a hardcover or an ebook version of Trickle Down Tyranny next week for me. What are you going to do? Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mike, you're the first up. Go ahead, please. The land of the liberal.
What an honor. Well, you know, we're not all liberals out here, though. We have to fight the fight just like you every day. And simple, hard.
Mike, I love your call, but I can't hear you. You're echoing. So please, let's go to a non-speaker phone. Thank you for the call. That was really not from Ann Arbor. It was from Pelican Bay, I think. They give him one call a day in the rec room.
Mike, I got to tell you something. We bought one of those telephone booths after they went out of business. You know, we got it in an auction gallery. And we had a grandmother who really liked her phone. You know, we heard of the iPhone, where she said she had a phone, and she said, it's my phone, because I'm always on it, and that's why I say it's an iPhone, because it's my phone. Anyway, the point is, we bought that phone booth, and Mike, we buried her in that phone. She loved her phone so much, that old dial phone, we just buried her in that booth. I'm starting to think that's who listens to the show. I have no idea anymore. How can anybody in the world tell me they're interested in the utterances of Mitt Romney, Barack Obama, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, and Neuron? Neuron's gone altogether. I think he went to the moon. Where is Neuron? He's completely off the canvas since I called him Neuron. Now I'm going to get slammed by the Ron Paul, but don't take it the wrong way, please. You want to talk more about the race baiters, the haters, the race haters, the race baiters? Do you want me to talk about that? Well, I mean, what do you want me to talk about? Food again? A meatball? I can't do it. No meatball. I had a pizza last night. It's so bad for me. But why does it taste so good? I had a doctor friend he was one of the most advanced people in the world in nutrition and health, way before everybody. Real medical doctor, Stanford MD. And he went into nutrition in 1970. He knew more than most of the quacks today who know nothing. And Bob Cathcart, great man, great friend of mine, loved him. Sorry he's dead. Really miss him. He said to me that we are addicted to that which we are allergic to, which is true, actually, when you think about it. You look at everything that you're addicted to, whether it's food or drugs, you could say you're allergic to the very thing you're addicted to. Even in people, you want to really push that metaphor. The things we are addicted to are that which we are allergic to. So what are you going to do? You know, it's like a sign I saw in my father's store when I was 5 years old. You remember the little signs that I used to have in those days? Everything alike is illegal, immoral, or fattening. Well, it's true. Nothing's changed. Because in my life, the same is true that it was then, because it's a universal truth. Isn't it true in your life everything you like is illegal, immoral, or fattening? Except the Savage Nation, which is very interesting because this sort of sounds like it's a Samizdat news show in the ex-Soviet Union, which you're not allowed to listen to. It still has that quality, doesn't it? I still sound like I'm an underground guy, underground radio. Or if I, do you still like this show? Does anyone like this show? Yes or no? Well, why don't you tell me you love the show? Buddy needs to hear it every once in a while. Okay, Pittsburgh. Charlene, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I do love your show. And to answer your question regarding whether or not I still read the newspaper, no, I listen to you. You go over all the important topics.
Well, that's interesting.
So why
but
do
remember,
I need the
now,
newspaper?
This is important to remember, to give credit where credit is due. I don't do investigative reporting. I don't do any reporting. I aggregate stories, and I pick the ones that are of interest to me, you know?
It's interesting to me also, the important ones.
All right. Well, I do think that some of the ones I pick are important. I mean, talking about Subway sandwiches cutting out the $5 sandwich because the minimum wage is too high here, I wouldn't rank that as one of the most important news stories of the day, would you?
No, but you interlace your stories with humor, and I need that too.
Well, that's a different story. I'm going to interlace your day with a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. I don't even have the strength to ask you to give the title out. I'm so exhausted.
Savage.
So today I'm reading a boating magazine in the toilet. I get the boating magazines for the toilet. It's a good place to peruse such heavy reading material. I like to look at the water there, the boats, the mega yachts that I can't afford, you know. But one article caught my eye: the Russian petro billionaires and the kind of boats that they're building. And the world's largest private yacht to be named Eclipse is being built by a man who's in the home of Marx, Lenin, and Stalin, which is now the hottest mega yacht market in the world, Russia, where people are still starving, where people are living like serfs. There is a class of billionaire crooks who stole the oil and commodities out of the ground. They're living like czars, and they're outflanking even the Arabs in terms of super yacht purchases. So the biggest one will be built by a guy in Russia. It'll be a 557-foot mega yacht. 557 feet, 170 meters, to be built by Blohm & Voss, a subsidiary of Germany's ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems. And that will cast a shadow over the current Lord of the Seas, the 525-foot Dubai, owned by Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, ruler of Dubai. Ha, ha, ha. Dubai. Wonder where they get all their money from in Dubai. Well, they can certainly buy our ex-senators and secretaries of state for less money than you can buy a prostitute on eBay or wherever you find them. To him, they're cheaper. A senator to go around and walk around and try to peddle them? Well, less than a massage therapist. So the Russians are now outspending the others. Russia's eighth richest man, Suleiman Kerimkov, had it all, including the 295-foot Lursen boat, ICE, when he crashed his Ferrari in Nice, and now he's in a burn ward. Now, how do they make all of this money? How do they make so much money that they can buy two and three yachts? Some of these guys own three of them. One of them gave away a yacht of about 200 feet to a friend. So who are these oligarchs, these modern czars of Russia? They're young, in their 30s or 40s. They're billionaires overnight. And as much of Russia is floundering in a post-communist collapse, a handful of high-powered crooks with good political connections succeeded in gaining control of the country's vast state-owned industries and natural resources. They literally bought them. And how did they buy them? They didn't have any money. Many of them were college professors. But they were well-connected with the government. Follow me here because it's very similar to America. They were connected to the politicians, the corrupt politicians, and they get control of the vast state-owned industries and natural resources. How? Well, this took the form of loans for shares, deals and auctions, which some regard as the greatest scandal of the Boris Yeltsin era. And when Vladimir Putin, the old KGB chief, took over from Yeltsin, Putin was expected to undo the oligarchs' wealth. But what he said to them was, if you stay out of politics, I will not touch you. And so one of these guys bought a company called Sibneft, a company sitting on 30% of Russia's oil. You hear this? One man could buy a company called Sibneft. Remember, Russia was a socialist state. So the oil, the gas, the metals, the gold, the silver was all owned by the government. So now during privatization of the Yeltsin,
these crooks come along, and through corrupt politicians and payoffs, they get to buy all of these commodities, these natural resources. So this guy buys for $200 million, 30% of Russia's oil, not of his own money, but he borrows the money because of the value of the oil in the ground. So he borrows the money, he buys it, and then in 2005, Gazprom, Russia's state-owned gas company, buys out this 30% of the oil for $13 billion for Sibneft. So the guy borrows $200 million, and he makes $13 billion. You hear this? Then he buys $300 million worth for the $300 million boat, the Eclipse, he's having built. And he also owns the Chelsea England Football Club. He owns a Boeing 767 airplane, a townhouse in Belgravia, central London, a 440-acre estate in Sussex, and a villa in the south of France. He is also the governor of Chukotka and is reportedly trying to buy Silvio Berlusconi's former villa in Sardinia. I read in the article, none of the above information was made available by the secretive mogul. It says he doesn't comment on his personal property. Ranked by Forbes as the world's 16th richest man, worth $18.7 billion, this guy will add Eclipse to a private fleet that already includes three other mega yachts, 377-foot Polaris, 282-foot S. Castilla, and 160-foot Susurro. Once he had four mega yachts, but he gave away the fourth yacht, 370-foot Le Grand Bleu, complete with aquarium, cinema, and helicopter, to a business associate. Now, why am I telling you this story? Because in all nations, there arises a class of pirates. With unlimited greed, they have no nation. They're transnational pirates, in my humble opinion.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Give me some rock and roll here before I die. Gallup poll, 2/3 of U.S. are creationists. Really? Oh, my God. Oh. 2/3 of Americans say creationism is definitely or probably true. Mom, and well, I had a touch here. I really almost got appendicitis looking at this story. Hold it. The poll found that by a margin of more than 2-1, more Americans believe creationism is definitely true as opposed to those who believe it's stronger than evolution. Creationism, as you know, is the idea that God created humans in their present form within the past 10,000 years in accordance with biblical accounts. I guess they don't know about science. I guess you can. Look, I have told you 1,000 times, you don't have to become an illiterate, unwashed dummy to believe in God. You mustn't. In other words, you don't have to take it whole cloth. You can believe in God, and you can believe in the creation of man by God, and you can still understand science. They're not mutually exclusive, and I've done this on the show before. You don't have to throw away all of modern science and its discoveries in order to believe in God. This is the problem. It's just uneducated dolts who say there is no science. Carbon dating tells us that it's a little bit more than 10,000 years since the dinosaurs died. So how do you make a cord out of this? I had a religious man call the show who helped you understand this, that you can believe in God and creation and still understand science. But many of you want either or. You don't understand how to combine science with creationism. You don't want to know it. All you want to know is that God did it and that's the end of it. And anyone who doesn't believe it is the Antichrist. What he said was, is our concept of time is different as described by the Bible than as we know it. In other words, God created the world in 7 days, could be 7 million years. You see what I'm saying? That's how a rabbi, a brilliant intellectual rabbi said, of course he believes in God and creation. You see, in the supreme being. But it's like, on day one he did X, but day one to God could be 1 million years. You see what I'm saying? It's a different time frame than what we understand. I have to talk like George Bush. I have to slow down and compress and spread out syllables and talk slower because the audience may be, it's like Hillary Clinton speaks that way when she sells, or George Bush. Amnesty kind of thing. What was my statement on the Neanderthal and previous forms of humanity or earlier forms of human beings or proto-humans? Let's put it to you that way. They were God's experiments. In other words, God has a whole universe to manage. And this is only one of many that we even know of. Maybe he has millions of universes, and this is like one universe with one tiny planet. And so he says, all right, I'm going to create something like man down there. Let's start with this guy. Make it look like, nah, he's too hairy, stooped over. All he does is eat vegetables. It's not going to work out. Let's cancel that one. All right, let's go back to the drawing board. Well, yeah, all right, let's go. Then he goes to the next evolutionary step. The guy's a little more upright. No, that's like more like it. That's more like my vision. Keep it up. Keep it up there. Then eventually got to us. I mean, what is wrong with that concept? Why can't it be playful? See, a lot of you, you say God can't be playful. God is playful. This is what you don't understand about God. God can be playful. God can be playful. God can be loving. God can be kind. It's not, I know many of you like the fire and brimstone view that I give you all the time, but there is some mirth in heaven. So God could have done that. Because, no, I don't. The chimpanzee, maybe that was his original idea for man. But then he's, he's an ugly little guy. And it's never going to work on television. We can't do a series around him. No. All right, let's try the Neanderthal. Give it a, add another gene in there. Put in another gene. We'll try the next step. A little taller, a little less hairy. Right after the show, I'm racing over to the yacht harbor to go out on my boat. So during the break, I called and I ordered two pizzas. I have a friend who's going to bring the pizza to the boat. So I said, so she bothered me. She said to me, what kind of pizza? I said, I'm on a break. I don't know anything. I said, I know sausage and pepper and onion. I said, no, I can't. I said, Teddy's kosher. I said, he can't have sausage. It was funny. She laughed. I said, he's Hillel, not halal. That's a joke unto itself, but it's like for a very, very small number of people from Hillel to halal in one generation. You know what I find amazing is that halal food is actually kosher food. This is the good news, is that moderate Muslims actually eat Jewish food. Thank God. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same kosher food laws. There's got to be some way to build on that. If a Muslim who's not fanatic can eat a kosher food that the rabbi certifies the chicken, you know, was circumcised or whatever it is, that the cow didn't go to a bathhouse, the normal cow had a husband, had a baby, then got slaughtered, boom, and he'll eat it. And they could both eat the same cow and the same chicken and then the milk and the meat and the flesh and the poultry and no winged creatures and no hoof creatures and no flying creatures with big eyes and no feelers if they go out in the right way, the wrong way, the feeler is this, then you can't eat it. It's the same rules. It comes from the Old Testament. There's got to be a way to build understanding here between Jews and Muslims. You start with the halal and kosher thing. Maybe there's a way to save the world here. You can't eat a crawling creature that crawls backwards on its belly, but you can eat a crawling creature that flies on Mondays between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern time. God. You ever read those rules? They're very complicated. Most of us can't even live up to the Big Ten. Just thou shalt not steal. Forget about it. You're already looking for a clause. Well, I don't steal, but sometimes I have to take. That's not stealing. It's like Paris Hilton. It's L.A. I do not steal, but I hear you on that. But I took something that wasn't mine, but it wasn't really theirs either. And because I'm in L.A., I hear you when I was caught and released in 3 days. Take another rule on the Big Ten that's impossible for me to follow. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, I don't commit adultery because the person I did it with wasn't married. I may be married, but they weren't. So technically, if you look at it from a biblical point of view, that's not adultery. That's just having a good time, and the girl was single, and she knew I was married, and she wanted the money, so who's it bothering? Nobody. Wasn't adultery. All right. Everything is a clause and an out and a twist. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass, his house, his mouse, his clock. The mouse ran up the clock. I don't covet. I only want it. How does it differ with the want from covet? I don't exactly know, but I know that covetousness is horrible. It is biblically detestable. So I never covet. I only want that which I take. So what I'm saying is we can't even live up to the Big Ten most of the time. Lie, cheat, steal. But now you take religious Jews and religious Muslims, they got like 300, or the religious Jews have 333 commandments. No wonder they're praying all day long. They're praying for forgiveness. Because all day long they're breaking a commandment. They got to be. They didn't touch the fringe properly. The fringe was blue and white, but not exactly the right blue. They prayed forward instead of backwards. The head moved. It's so complicated. And that's why you have to pray all day long if you have 333 rules. Because no doubt you're breaking the rules somewhere. Even when you're sleeping, you broke a rule. The first thing you do when you wake up is say, God, forgive me for breaking a rule in the middle of the night. I touched myself below the belt. I didn't mean to. But I was asleep. It was unconscious. It was subconscious. It wasn't me. It was Harry did it. I didn't really do it. There's an evil spirit in me named Harry. Harry reached down below the belt. I didn't mean to. He did. You should punish him. Don't punish me. But since we're in the same body, I understand you, God. I forgive you. God says, you don't have to forgive me, man. I'm the big guy. I'm in charge. Well, I forgive you anyway. Don't say it again because then you're really going to get punished.
Wait. Hang on. Before I go, how much money do you need to earn each month? That's what IncomeAtHome.com wants to know. They'll help you make that happen. IncomeAtHome.com is America's leading work from home business. They have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. They are legit. Your age, education, experience, it doesn't matter. You can do this. You can literally earn money on your computer from your kitchen table 24/7. Even while you sleep, there's no pressure. All you need is a little spare time and their one-on-one coaching to earn great money from home. Hey, look, if you're sick of living paycheck to paycheck, if you're worried about job security or retirement, if you're ready to make great money from home, part-time or full, so check them out. Visit IncomeAtHome.com. Check them out. That's IncomeAtHome.com.
Savage.
Since I've had my espresso, and since I'm not going to sleep tonight anyway because I'm sacrificing tonight's sleep for today's show, as I did last night. I've been up, I think, for about 36 hours. No, I slept, but I didn't sleep. It was like a tossed, horrible, you know, the nightmares were daymares in the middle of the night. But there was nowhere to go in there. The problem is I have nothing to do in the middle of the night. What do you do in the middle of the night when you can't sleep? I have answers to that, too, because there was a period in my life that I was totally insomniac, and I thought I would die from a lack of sleep, and then I read a lot of books on insomnia, and I found out that insomnia can be your best friend. What it means is you don't really need to sleep. You're not tired. Most of us sleep when we don't even have to, incidentally. This is a myth that you have to sleep. It's like a myth like you have to have three meals a day or that you have to drink eight glasses of water or three cups of milk a day or whatever. You're not tired, so you're not sleeping. The trick is to not lay in bed. I remember reading one book during this period when I couldn't sleep, and it was mainly money worries. It was money worries because of a lot of reasons, whatever. The kids were young, and I was worried about their future and my future and what am I going to do. And I killed myself, and they won't hire me because I'm a white male, and they're hiring idiots and morons and putting them into jobs they're not qualified for and perverts, which, of course, was 100% true. Just take a look at your universities today, putting what they're doing in the universities outside the science departments, which, of course, unfortunately for them, they can't yet populate with their inferior plants, because either you understand the periodic table of the elements or you don't. You can't quite do what you do in the social sciences. Nevertheless, I'm up, I'm this and that. So I get a book that says more people have died worrying about a lack of sleep than from a lack of sleep, and I forget who wrote the book. And it was like 10 things you could do. Someone's going to write this down, steal it, and make a book out of it probably. That's okay. I don't really care. Go ahead and do it. And I learned a lot of different techniques. The number one thing was I went out on my deck and looked at the stars. And that's when I started to love stars again after childhood. You see, okay, I'm up. It's dark. The sky is black. The stars are bright. What am I going to do with the time? How about getting out a book that shows me star formations? So there they were. And slowly, you know, and the next one is learn to read, learn to do this, learn to do that. And before long, when you stop worrying about not sleeping, you wind up sleeping again. It's like everything else. You understand that or not? Sure, it's like everything else. Is, you know, there used to be an adage amongst guys that a lot of guys are always hungry for a date for a woman and they couldn't get one. And the guys who did always had the same story to tell, which is that women can tell when you're nervous and you want a woman and they'll avoid you like you have leprosy. That the only guys women want are the ones who don't want them or let's say are aloof and really don't care. It's a terrible reality. It's the same the other way, too, by the way. You know, you get desperate, the other party can sense it like an animal. Well, how is it put? We pursue that which retreats. Have you heard that one in the dating world? It's pretty much true in the business world as well. We pursue that which retreats. So the best thing to do is retreat, even when you want to pursue, in most cases. It's a terrible rule, but it's like hunting, and you ask a hunter. There's only one way to hunt, or there's only a particular few ways to hunt. And none of them consist of rushing right at the animals. But that's neither here nor there. So let's go back to the insomnia before I get too far off the track. There are many other things you can do. And, of course, I learned to use passion flower herbal tea. I was very into the whole story there. And that's a great – wait, hold it. There's my story. Let me tell you how I learned to use passion flower herbal tea and how not only did it give me relief from insomnia, but – I then learned to carry this tea around with me all over the world in my travels, and it became a great relaxant on airplanes. I didn't have to drink any alcohol. I didn't need the 2 little bottles of wine that they used to have in those days. Remember those days when they served you wine in those 2 little bottles that you got? The El Cheapo wine bottles that were on airplanes. Now I don't know if it's bottled wine. Well, anyway, so I heard about a guy, a pharmacist in San Francisco on Ellis Street. He was like an old guy, about 85, 88 at the time. And he was an old timer going way, way back. I don't know what his name was. He was an old Jewish guy named Morris. He was right near the Glide Memorial Church, as a matter of fact, which is a largely African-American church. And I forget the name of the pharmacy. He's since passed on. I go in there because I heard he knew everything about herbal medicine. He was a real pharmacist as opposed to people who were faking it with chlamydia and half mustaches in the health food stores. And I come in, and right away I say to him, "Do you have a passion flower herbal tea?" See, he says to me, "Why, who are you? What do you want?" It was like right out of Brooklyn, and the guy, it was in San Francisco. I said, no, I just, he said, "What, are you an inspector with the FDA? I have nothing. Get out of my store." That's how it started. "I don't have nothing. I have no herbal tea," he says to me. That's all he sold. So I said to him, "Well, I heard you sell herbal tea." "I don't know who you heard from. I have nothing here. I'm a regular drugstore." So I said, "Calm down." I had to show him one of my books. He was afraid I was an inspector, in other words. I think he had been busted by the FDA for selling real products that work, called herbal medicine, instead of toxic chemicals that killed and addicted people, called pharmaceuticals. So we got to talk, and he said, "What's your problem?" I said, "I can't sleep." He says, "Look, mister," he said, "you're still wasting your time." He said, "Go across the street to Joe's Bar and have 2 shots of scotch and go home. You'll fall asleep. I have nothing for you." Well, eventually he gave me the passion flower herbal tea. I used it. I would brew it every night, and I slept like a baby in the arms of Buddha.
Savage.
Let me describe one thing for you about landing and taking off, because it was contested as to what is more frightening, if you want to put it that way, or more exciting, if you want to put it that way. So let us begin at the beginning. I don't want to build it up like I was an astronaut, but for me, it was pretty big deal, okay? Civilian, never flew a jet. I mean, never flew a combat plane. I'll make it faster than slower. Strapped in, everyone tells you when you take off in the C-2 Greyhound, it's going to be like an ordinary routine flight for the 30 to 40 minutes, which is about how long it took from the North Station in San Diego to get out to the ship, which was in an area off the coast, and I can't describe where it was because it's not your business. But it was about 45 minutes out, let's put it to you that way. So they said, it's going to be very, very rough when you land, I was told, because the pilots will often do a bank and a roll, a 90-degree roll, in order to slow the plane down. I said, even with distinguished visitors on board? They said, yeah, no matter who's aboard, they'll come in and fly over the deck to get a bearing, and then they're going to make a sharp left bank and come around. And they said, then the fun begins, because remember, they got to hit the tail hook. There are 4 lines. There are 4 wires on that deck. Now, those of you who know anything about it know that they never want to hit the number 1 wire. Never. You'd say, wow, that would be better. No. The reason they don't aim for the number 1 wire is because it would mean the angle of approach is too low, and they're liable to smash into the carrier. So the preferred cables to grab, the number 1 preferred line is number 3. They want to hit 3 line. You can hit 2 or 3, but 3 is the best. If you hit 4, it means you missed 2 or 3. Now, you got to come in at full power. Why does the pilot have to come in at full power, meaning his engines are running at full speed? Because if his tail hook should miss the wire, or it should skip off the wire, the plane has to be ready to take off. The pilot has to be able to go wham all the way forward and take off, or else he crashes on the deck. You don't need that disaster. Now, the same thing is played out on an F-A-18 Hornet. Can you imagine coming in at full power? What kind of skill and nerve this takes? Well, I wasn't on an F-A-18. I was on a turboprop plane. It came in at probably, I don't know, 120 knots. I don't know the exact speed, 80 to 120 knots. And it's called a controlled crash because you go from 100 and whatever knots to zero in about like 1-2 seconds or something like that when the tail hook hits. They said, you're going to hear it's going to sound like the bottom of the plane is falling out when you come down close to the deck because you're flying about a foot off the deck. And the tail hook is grabbing along, dragging along the bottom. And it sounds like pieces are falling off the plane, but don't be scared because the plane's not crashing. And also, when you take off, they said smoke is going to be coming up from the floorboards because whatever, I don't know where the smoke, there was lots of smoke coming through, whatever. So the landing was nothing to me. I actually was laughing and had a great time. It was a great deal of fun. That was nothing. So I then spent the next 24 hours asking everyone, well, what's worse, landing or taking off? And it was very interesting. People were saying, well, landing is worse than taking off. I got to tell you, the taking off was different and a complete loss of control. I didn't have a sense of a loss of control in the landing. I don't know why. Well, you're sitting backwards, number one, and since you're landing and the thrust takes you backwards, you're thrown into the seat rather than out of the seat, so I guess you don't feel it as much. Unfortunately, the seats are still backwards when you take off, which is exactly the wrong way for them to be because you're going to be thrust with your head down. So you're held in a four-point harness, but your head is not held by anything. So anyway, you're sitting on the deck, and it's very hot in there. It's not air-conditioned. It's a military plane, and this full thing on your head, whatever it's called, full cranial, you're sweating like hell because it's hot, and the earphones are very tight because they don't want you to go deaf. And the engines are revving and revving and revving and revving, and it's noisy, and your legs are crashed right up against the seat in front of you to make sure you don't, you know, kill yourself. Arms crossed, and then I don't know who they were, but they jump up and scream seconds before that it starts flashing, prepare for blah, 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 it's flat. And then the guys jump up, these huge guys screaming, you know, take off, take off, take off, you know, like that's blah, 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 and bang.
Savage.